Shout out to our newest sponsor, Outlaw Distillery. Made from only the best hand-selected local ingredients, Outlaw Distillery has become our new favorite weekend sipper. From grain to glass, Outlaw never uses artificial flavors, artificial colors, or artificial sweeteners, while wax dipping every bottle by hand. From their white whiskey to the spiced rum, there's endless possibilities with some Outlaw in your glass. Enjoy their products like white whiskey, bourbon whiskey, coffee rum, vanilla bean rum, and their honey bourbon, which I can't get enough of. Support local, book a tour, and head to 552nd West 8360 South Midvale, Utah, or ask your local liquor store for bottles of Outlaw's delicious nectar. Trust us when we say Outlaw means premium. Until the next spirits, my friend. Newsflash, Squatters and Wasatch's West Side Tavern and Cold Beer Store is still open. Don't let all that busy and dusty construction bother you. If our Prius can make it past that construction, you have no excuse. Just use the south entrance next to Ashley Holmes' store. Stop on in for a top of Maine wit beer, classic hop rising in all its varieties, or one of our favorites, Chasing Tails Golden Ale. Open 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Come stop in and check out this award-winning craft beer hotspot. Grab beers to go or sit and enjoy a pint or two. And guess what? They also have food served by some of the coolest cats in town. So you're all set. See you guys at Westside Tavern. Listening to the Taste Masters, where we sit down and learn from artists within the world of craft beer, liquor, and various fermentation techniques. All right, friends and families, we are here in the heart of proper outside on a beautiful Sunday morning, and I'm here with my good man, Jacob Fletch. How's it going, homie?
Oh, it's great.
So tell me about your last name. I want to know this. Fletch, you said it came from Switzerland?
Yeah, so Switzerland originally. What I've been told... Of course, this is all from my family, and you can't really trust my family. But allegedly from Switzerland, there's apparently a town on the more Italian side of Switzerland, comprised of Flutsches. I guess we had some people move to America at some point. They changed the spelling, so took out the umlaut over the U, okay. Added that E in. Because that's all it really is. But then also change the pronunciation at the same time, just to Fletch, to try to Anglicanize it a little bit more. And ultimately, I just get called Flutch a lot anyways. So really...
It goes back to the original.
Yeah, really, they really didn't think through that well, but probably had other things on their mind moving to a new place.
Interesting. So speaking about family, where you sit in your family? How do you have brothers and sisters? You have a mom and dad?
I do have a mom and
moms,
a dad.
Two dads. What's going on?
I've got a mom and a dad. I'm the middle child. I've got an older brother, and I've got a younger brother.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Bunch of boys, huh? How was it growing up with all brothers?
So I actually grew up with an older sister and a younger brother. Mm. My older brother transitioned.
Gotcha.
To what he is now. So that started happening when I was in high school.
Okay.
I didn't fully understand what was going on. So that was actually, obviously, my experience wasn't obviously the difficult experience of the two
sure.
of us, but it was still, getting asked, like I had friend, like, you know, grew up with a lot of Mormon friends, and I had, one of my friend's moms asked, so I heard your sister's a little confused. I didn't really know how to answer. It was like,
yeah.
No, not confused. And I stand by that. I don't stand by the reason I said it. I certainly do stand by that. But yeah, so growing up with an older, at the time, older sister, now an older brother, it was great.
Good.
I'm definitely a little bit, my little brother and I are closer a little bit closer in age, I guess. No, I guess we're pretty evenly spaced. But my older brother moved off to college right when I started middle school. So okay. I feel like there was a lot of bonding time that we didn't really,
Yeah. How much older is your older brother?
He is. It's a really good question. Thank you for asking.
I'm testing you.
He's mid 30s.
Okay. And so how old are you right now?
I'm 30.
Gotcha. Cool. So not too bad.
No, not so. Maybe he's like 36 or 37.
Okay. I can see a little gap though.
Yeah.
Well, nonetheless, yeah. That's awesome. So you said Mormon. So you grew up in Utah?
I did. I did not grow up Mormon, okay. But I did grow up here in Utah, and a lot of my friends were Mormon.
Gotcha. Okay. So give me the family came from the East Coast. How did the family settle in Utah?
Yeah. Yeah, I was born in Massachusetts.
Damn.
My family's all originally from California, though.
And other sides of the nation.
So my all of us, me and my siblings, were all born in different states.
Cool.
My dad was moving around for work. Actually, each time my mom got pregnant, he got let go from his job every single time. So there, he'd get a new job and move to another state, and then kid would be born.
Wow.
So my older brother was born in Philadelphia, I think.
Okay.
I know my parents are going to listen to this, so they'll probably tell me I'm wrong.
It's fine. It'll help you out.
And I was born in Massachusetts, and then when I was about 5, we moved here to Utah.
Ah, and that's where the younger brother's born,
yep.
In Utah. And been here ever since?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. So in Salt Lake proper?
More like Sandy, Cottonwood Heights area is where I was raised.
So how was, you said not Mormon, so how was growing up in Utah? Was that interesting?
Yeah, it was a little weird. I think for the most part, most people were pretty accepting. Looking back, there were definitely friends that were probably trying to, I think they were definitely my friends, but I think they also had they were trying to convert me a little bit as well.
It's hard when you're growing up and you don't know anything else besides, oh, he's not part of us, so bring us apart. I can see the mindset in a way without knowing.
For sure.
Can't differentiate, like, what am I doing? Why am I doing it?
Oh, I don't hold it against them. Yeah. That's what they were told is good to do.
Yeah.
You know, and it didn't work, so.
It didn't work. So then move past growing up. How'd you make it into brewing?
So I was... So it would have been, I guess, like 7 years ago that, so I was working as a manager at Target. They can't see where I'm pointing.
That way, guys,
at the 300, the 300 West Target.
Gotcha.
And corporate, was going to get rid of my position. And my position was real easy and at the time was pretty decent pay for the amount of work I did. I was scheduling probably wasn't supposed to be doing this, but I was scheduling myself like 3-day weekends every week. And I had a really small team. It was really, really easy. And I really didn't want to go back and do anything else because I would have to work more and I wouldn't get paid as much. And so I was like, well, I better figure out what to do with my life. And it's like, I like beer. I feel like this is how most people start. It's either like, I like beer, so I'm going to homebrew. I like beer, so I'm going to go work at a brewery, right? But I think that first step is always, obviously, I like beer, right?
Yeah, right.
Why would you go into this industry if you don't like beer? That would be a really bad decision.
I want to talk to someone who does that. They went into beer
Find somebody, I will scrutinize that episode. I want to know that person's mind.
I'll have you co-host that one.
Yeah.
Yeah, we can bring that one.
Just grill them.
But then seeing the craft beer scene, what was the first craft beer? How did you, like, what made you enjoy beer? Yeah, you like beer, but how?
Honestly, I think Guinness was the first beer that I had that was like, beautiful. Oh, beer can be different from, you know,
like
just your
Budweiser, Bud Light.
What I would now obviously call like a macro light lager, right?
Was it off tap or in the can?
Oh, it was off the tap, obviously. Ooh. I don't, you know, in the can, I don't know, maybe I'm a little bit biased. I don't think it tastes the same. I'm pretty sure Guinness in the can doesn't taste the same. Even with the little widget, whatever they call it.
Yeah.
It's not the same.
I will agree with you, but to each his own, right?
Yeah. And again, you can't get Guinness on tap everywhere. It's sometimes, you know.
But when you see it, it's like a go-to.
Yeah.
I still,
it's just light and you can have so many of them, but it's still got a little bit of flavor to it.
And that's interesting because people see dark beer and they think, oh no, my God, I can't have dark beer. It's too heavy. I get that a lot as a brewer, you know, especially when we go to the beer fest. Like, that, what's your lightest beer? I don't do dark beers. Well, try a Schwarz beer. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
It'd be surprising.
I know the color is a little confusing.
Like when Grid City did their dark pilsner.
When did they do that? I never tried that.
2-3 months ago. Yeah.
Oh, damn.
I'd go there for just the milk shot. So I'd get the milk shot of just the dark pilsner and just look like, I call it a chocolate milk shot. I'll take a chocolate milk shot. It was just fantastic. But it looks scary and deceiving and menacing, but it's not. Yeah, it's fascinating. Because you recently came out with a, what was your Sith Lord?
Gungan Sith Lord.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I keep talking about that one. That one's a good beer, dude.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that one.
I like that a lot. I still, it's one of those beers that every batch I do, I want to change it a little bit more. I'm never quite like 100% happy with it.
Good. Never be 100% happy with it.
I have had like a beer that the first batch tasted like, I don't need to change it. That's good. But all the other ones have pretty much always been like, I want to change something a little bit at least. And Jeff has always been pretty good at like allowing me to do that, but holding me back so I don't get to letting me know that, no, it's still a good beer, but you know, kind of let's change it a little bit. Yeah.
I like that. So when it came to that, went to that Guinness, do you remember where that turned your life in beer?
So let's see. At the time, my bar was Piper Down.
Okay.
Which
has Guinness on tap almost all the time, right?
Yeah. And I did, I had a friend, still have the friend, I think he's really the one that pushed me more into craft beer. He was really into beer, craft beer at the time. And just started trying to get me to try new things. And obviously you're like 21, 22, whatever. Someone's like, here, try this alcohol. You're like, yeah, okay, sure.
Yeah, right.
I'm not going to say no to that. Looking back, obviously, it's funny when I started my craft beer journey. It's like, what you didn't, you know, you're at that point of that, I always forget the name of it, the bell curve of the knowledge bell curve where like where it's like, you know, your confidence that you know everything about it, but like you really know nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what that's called, but yes.
I always forget it. Every time I talk about it, I cannot remember it. And then I look it up later. Obviously I was at that peak of confidence and ignorance at that point. Now I'm in that comfortable spot where I know I don't know anything.
You've surrendered to that.
But at least I know that.
Good.
I was like, this beer thing is great. It can't be that hard, right? And so I started, it's like, I guess, move forward a couple of years. With the whole Target thing, I just started dropping off resumes at breweries, and this would have been like right when,
with no experience in brewing.
Yeah, no experience. I dropped one. Proper was obviously one of the places I dropped off a resume. They didn't need anybody in production, but they saw that I was a manager, and they needed a supervisor for the bar. And so, like, I got a call like in a couple days. And so I didn't have any bartending experience, so they trained me up on that. They later removed me from the supervising position. but I still stayed a bartender. And just the whole time I let them know that I was really interested in getting into the brewery. And so after about probably like a year and a half of that, they had an assistant or a brewery assistant position open. Which mostly meant washing kegs and doing beer deliveries and going around and cleaning the lines that we had accounts at, because we didn't have a distributor at the time.
Okay.
And that was a real pain in the ass. That was not fun. It was just driving around the whole valley. A couple days a week. Picking up stuff for the restaurants as well.
Did you really?
I do Costco runs.
Oh my God.
Which was terrible. But now I know the best time to go to Costco.
Which is
in the right when they open.
It's good to know. So when the toilet paper fiasco happens again, we can be right there when it opens.
Yeah. Yeah. if you really think that toilet paper is the most important thing to hoard.
It is the most important thing.
I would argue the most important thing to hoard in an emergency would be proper beer. But
hey, that's a good plug. I like that.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
No, so then we you kept doing those deliveries. How long were you doing that? The brewing assistant.
I was probably doing that stuff for another year and a half before we signed on with the distributor. And I started doing more like packaging and like a little bit of cellar stuff. And then a little over 2 years ago. Yeah. So like right at the start of the pandemic is when they started training me up on the brew house. Because they wanted a lot more overlap in skills should anybody get COVID.
Yeah.
And, you know, they didn't want us to be stuck without enough brewers to do stuff. So
COVID, in essence, helped you become the brewer you are today?
A little bit, yeah. I don't want to give COVID too much credit.
I mean, give us some credit.
but yeah, if it weren't for COVID, it certainly wouldn't have happened as soon as it did, I don't think.
And here's a question. When it comes to your brew father, who's the one that helped you the most within the brewing, like, you know, cellaring and brewing?
That's tricky because I feel like it was pretty evenly split between everybody because there was also a lot of, throughout the time I've been here.
You've had some good hands in here.
There's been a lot of changes of who is here. Mm-hmm. And so it's been a little bit of everybody. So I really don't want to give more credit to one person than another.
Yeah.
I would certainly say that at least for right now where things are, Steve, our current head brewer, is been really great and supportive of all my recipe development. And he's been very, very helpful, and he's mostly let me do my own thing and let me chase after what I want to do.
Good.
but still offering advice, and just he's very kind.
Yeah.
And supportive. I'd
he's
say that's
a big hearted motherfucker, and he will help you become the person you want to be.
Absolutely.
And that's up to you.
Yeah.
Whether you want to do it. And that's why Steve is a great, you know, great individual. So what challenges currently you face still that you're still an up and coming? I mean, I don't know how to say this, but you're an up and coming brewer still, right? You're still learning, like we all are, right?
Yeah.
What's some challenges you face currently in the brewing aspect that you're still trying to get over?
I would say imposter syndrome is the big one.
Yeah.
I definitely still have that big time.
Why do you think that's an issue when it comes to brewing?
I would say it's more interacting with other brewers.
Mm.
It's like, obviously, me being on the brew deck for 2 years isn't a very long time.
Okay.
And then especially like when you go to something like, you go to CBC, the Craft Brewers Conference, and you go to some of those seminars, and you're like, I don't know half the words they're saying. It's really intimidating. And you're like,
I can see that.
These people have like they have a doctorate in whatever, and they use that for beer. They use that to make less money. That's wild.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, that's funny you bring that up, because I was going to ask you, who's someone in the beer industry now currently, or you've met throughout? It doesn't have to be Utah specifically,
sure.
But you've met that you want to keep meeting. You want to keep you want to pick their brain. Like, I want to know more about what makes you tick.
I'm going to have to go with, and this is somebody whose brain I pick plenty, but I would have to go with Rachel Bell. She's a good friend of mine. We tried and failed to get a beer history podcast going.
Okay.
I've always been a history nerd, and obviously I love beer, and so trying to do a beer history podcast was, to me, a really great idea. The schedules just didn't work out for it. But she did a master's in anthropology, I believe. And she did that with beer. She recreated like an ancient beer recipe. And I think that's so, so dope.
Do you happen to remember what beer it was? Like what style it was?
Well, so it was like one of those, like, you know, when you see the articles about like new evidence found in China of a beer made like 10,000 years ago. That, yeah. So it was like that. So it's realistically, it's not like a beer style. It's beer in the sense of when we talk about ancient beer, and that it had everything that had sugars in it. There was honey. There was, you know, there was
open fruit.
There was grapes. There was fruit. There was probably some sort of like, I don't know, probably some sort of like sorghum or something. I don't know what was growing back then. But certainly not the barley we know today.
No.
But that would be a better question for Rachel.
Yeah, we got to bring her back on and do another one. Rachel, but whenever she comes on, it's a great time.
But I love that stuff. Beer anthropology, I think, is so cool. And she's really, obviously, she's really intelligent. She's doing safety stuff. That's not that title doesn't the title I have given her for that does not do safety does stuff. Not do her justice for Canarchy though. That's what she does now. She's got an awesome big girl job.
Yeah, right.
So she travels like it can be hard to meet up with her because she travels a lot.
Yeah, now. It's fun to see her doing all the things and yeah. and you can see her process of learning. It's really fun to watch.
Absolutely. Yeah.
When it comes to more skills and hobbies you have,
yeah.
What's something, skills and hobbies that you have that you probably people don't know about?
Well, I would say my hobby of swords would be one that...
Pray do tell.
About 2 months ago, I started taking classes at a place called True Edge Academy, which is a... It's a HEMA academy, HEMA being Historical European Martial Arts. So Historical European Martial Arts takes is based on unarmored combat. So you're obviously still wearing protective gear so that you're not hurting each other.
Yeah.
And you're using swords that are designed to, you know, they're not sharpened, but they're designed to be weighted still accurately. And you're using, woodcuts and treatises from, I'm going to get the centuries wrong, but I feel like it's like the 9th to the 16th century.
Okay.
That's what the historical aspect of it is based on. So the biggest tradition in HEMA is probably the longsword. There's a lot of different ones. And so at True Edge Academy, we focus mostly on the German longsword.
Okay.
I've been playing with swords for 2 months, basically.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Have you seen one blacksmith prepared? You've seen one actually being made?
On TV.
Forged?
On yeah. TV. I've watched Forged in Fire.
Lord of the Rings. Oh, Forged in Fire. That's really cool. I wish I was a blacksmith. You know what I mean? Back in the day.
Yeah.
This seems like a cool job. Dirty,
it
does, but
It sounds like hard work. I mean, it's a lot. I feel like there's some similar aspects working over really hot stuff, you know.
But then creating a perfect craft and then releasing that craft to the world. And always, you know, the fine artists and the masters have that really dialed in.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah,
I like you're taking your creativity and you're going to another realm.
Yeah,
right. So in that European martial arts, what specific? You said German, but is there other areas in Europe that you're focusing on in your class?
Right. So right now, just focusing on the German tradition.
And then are you going to move around, or do you know if you're going
to
move around?
Once I have the good foundation, I'd like to move over to different stuff. I think just looking at it, rapier and dagger is really cool.
Ooh.
So a lot of times you use what's called a parrying dagger in your offhand, and you can use that to block and catch the blade. Just pole arms in general, I think, are real neat. Obviously, sounds pretty really different cool. from long swords.
That sounds really cool.
Yeah.
So how is this not different? So it's just not LARPing.
It's not LARPing. So LARPing is live action role play.
Yes.
This is not role play. There are probably people that do both.
Okay.
This is still a martial art. You know, it's still about combat, and it's about and most martial arts are based in the tradition of that martial art. So this is still very much based in the tradition. Well, we can find at least of the tradition. It's digging up these traditions with HEMA rather than a tradition that has been continuously practiced. as with most, you know, like Kung Fu and Karate and Wing Chun and all those. But it's and LARPing, I think you're generally using like foam swords and stuff. I don't know. I honestly don't know a ton about LARPing.
I don't know.
But I would say, yeah, the difference is this is not a role-playing thing necessarily.
You're legit learning arts, martial arts, but with weapons.
Yeah, absolutely.
It makes way more sense. And it can be a little more dangerous than live-action role-playing, like, you know.
Yeah, there's some, I mean, we wear protective gear, you know, even though, because you can still, it's still steel.
Yeah.
You can still hit pretty hard, and you still have to control the strength of which you're hitting. You can get thrown out of tournaments and banned from tournaments if you hit people hard, if you're going too aggressive.
Because it could be, I mean, not lethal, but it can be very aggressive.
You could, very like, brute. if you were to come around the back and hit somebody in the back of the neck with the sword full force, you could absolutely paralyze somebody like that. You know, jeez. Even though we have, well, there's a little bit of protection there, that's absolutely not somewhere you're, if someone, like, turns around while you're sparring, first of all, you're not supposed to hit them. You're also not supposed to turn around while you're sparring.
Mm.
So,
but in case that, you know,
but like if someone turns around, you're done. Like the judge should yell.
Does the judge go in with like a sword? Because like
so, the judge normally has like a staff that first they use to motion to start.
Okay, so there is like a protective, like almost he could go in and kind of stop the blow.
I don't know if he.
I feel like it's.
I've never seen that. I've never seen that happen.
Because in UFC or whatever, you can get in. Your body can get in. Yeah. You might take one into the face.
I feel like more than that, it would be like in case a sword swings wide and you're because, you know, the judge is standing just outside of the ring.
Oh, because you want to be within striking distance.
You know, and they should be able to move out of the way. But I guess just in case, they can protect themselves with it.
Good question.
I don't know.
That's a great question.
I honestly don't know.
Find that out for me because I'm curious how the refs staying safe. But trying to facilitate a way to make you guys safe, too, in case some illegal action or something is becoming dangerous.
I would say most of the time, from what I've seen, the HEMA community is very good about policing itself. You'll see a lot of people calling, like a lot of fencers calling hits on themselves to their own detriment.
Mm.
You know, if the judge makes a call and they're like, no, they got me. There will be a lot of...
Cool. Hey.
Honesty is
nice. Little respect there too.
Is seen a lot in sparring, which is pretty cool.
Yeah. So it's, you know, you're doing a lot of German technique right now. You make German beers, right? You make
make some German
good
beers.
German beers. So where in the world do you want to travel that you haven't in Germany that you want to go try their beers and then come back and make that either
in Germany?
Or like say you want to go make a style of beer, like we want to go to Czech, or we want to go, you know, the UK, see what the Browns are all about, and come back and make that again, and then take that because you're doing a lot of.
Right.
I feel like you're doing a lot of German stuff.
Sure.
And right now you're doing it beer making, and then it's interesting. So what other culture do you want to bring back?
Honestly, what I'd love to, I would love to go to Japan and like see firsthand what they're doing.
Okay.
Because I feel like from what I've seen, their craft scene is very, very creative. They get really creative with stuff. And certainly so does our craft beer scene. We get some weird, weird stuff. But, you know, like they're using stuff like yuzu all the time. And obviously they're doing a lot more stuff with rice than we are. And I love rice lagers, at least a well-done rice lager.
By the way, the one you released at Proper.
Eastside Paradise? Thank you.
Fucking amazing.
That's one of the ones that I'm like, hands off. I like it. I'm going to leave it alone.
I crushed a little too much of that. It was a great beer, dude. Yeah,
it's super crushable. I love looking at that color. And being like, damn, I can see a full person through that.
Yeah, it was beautiful, man. It was, yeah. When I found out that was you, I'm like, motherfucker, hell yeah. I was proud of you. That was a good one.
Thank you. Yeah, I think Japan would be really interesting.
And then you could bring back and do the samurai sword. Because you guys are doing history, right?
Sure. You should do some katana.
That'd be really cool. Yeah. I mean, then you can make, and while you're studying the beer, you can translate it into your HEMA.
I don't know how that would work. I don't think those translate into each other.
They can. I mean, not together.
Okay.
But you're learning one aspect of that culture, and then you're taking it into two different crafts.
Absolutely.
I think it's really cool. All right, another question for you.
Yeah.
So within the craft, so you know Rachel.
Yeah.
But within our craft community, where it's the spirits, fermentation, you know, kombucha, all that, who's someone that you haven't met or haven't picked their brain of and you want to?
That, let's see. You know what I'm loving right now? I am loving, there's actually a lot of spirits coming from a lot of places in even just Salt Lake that I really love. And I love spirits.
What's your go-to? Spirit category.
My go-to? Ooh, probably gin.
Okay.
I love just a good old gin and tonic with good gin and good tonic and a fresh lime wedge. So good.
Keep it simple, yeah.
So good. But, you know, plenty of, like, gin is, good gin is delicious. I feel like I see a lot of really good stuff coming out of, what's it called? New World Distillery?
New World Distillery?
Up in,
Eden.
Yeah. And I would love to talk to them because I love their stuff. It's so good. they do an agave spirit,
yeah,
which is really obviously not tequila. It's not made in Mexico, but it's still really good. I like that a lot. What else have I had from them? Their Uma gin. I'm pretty sure that's them. It's got like the dragon. It's got a dragonfly on it. That's delicious.
I saw it at the Brewstillery.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I didn't get to try it. I was obviously serving.
I haven't gotten to try from them is their bourbon. Like everybody, I feel like all the local distilleries opened up within a couple years of each other. We had that big boom of local distilleries here. There must have been some sort of law change or something, because I feel like that's what always is. There's a law change, and all of a sudden it's more affordable to start these places up. I don't know, though.
Yeah.
Maybe that's one of the things I'd pick their brain about, is to ask them about, like, why? Why did everybody open up within a couple of years of each other? But, like, we saw everybody within, like, a year and a half put out their own bourbon that, you know, they made and aged themselves at the same time. And it was like, oh, God, there's too much. I don't have money for all this local bourbon.
Yeah.
And there's just one of the ones that I still haven't. And also because I'd have to drive up to Eden to get it. It's one of the ones I haven't gotten to try yet.
I like that. We'll make it happen.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Because I feel like, you know, we get these brewers meetups and we kind of hang out and whatnot. Yeah. Why can't we do a distillery one or bring more distillers into that?
Absolutely.
You know,
I want to
pick more of their brains. Like,
absolutely.
That'd be really cool. I mean, I don't know if I'll got to be really careful with that one because spirits, whoosh, sometimes. But I like the opportunity to commune, you know, bring the community together and just do. But Jacob, on that note, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to go refuel and take some photos and come right back.
Hell yeah.
Sound good? Shout out to our longtime and extremely supportive sponsor, Fisher Brewing Company. Founded in 1884 and going hard since 2017, Fisher Brewing is a local favorite amongst our community. With rotating ales and lagers, a new food truck in front every day, and probably the sweetest merchandise you can find, Fisher is one of the most welcoming and loving locations in Utah. Also, Fisher Brewing just launched their famous Cerveza and Fisher Double IPA in cans off their brand new canning line. Open every day and located at 320 West, 800 South in Salt Lake, Fisher is a must visit. Stay in touch with Fisher Brewing through social media or on their website for more incredible things to come. See you at Fisher, my friends. All right, family, we're back. Jacob, great job on being a brewer here at Proper, by the way.
Hey, thank you.
I think you're kicking ass since I met you day one. Like, nothing but smiles. You're a good guy. Very wholesome. Question I want to ask, a little deeper question for you.
Yeah.
I always see you running around the brewery. I see you going, you're obviously doing things outside of work. You have a beautiful fiance, by the way.
Oh, yes.
Congrats.
Yes, I do. Thank you so much.
And whose hair I cannot match. however, when it comes in the day, what do you do for self-care, for self-love for Jacob? What's something you do for yourself, man?
I think something that's important and something that we have a hard time doing in this in this industry is at a certain point, you need to leave the work at work, which it's hard in this industry because we get into this industry because we start loving it in our personal life, right?
Yeah.
We love beer in our personal life. And so it can be hard to separate those. But I think, and certainly not every day, you know, there are still certainly days where I get off work and I go and I do some, you know, I go and I chat with people at other breweries. I'd talk to other brewers and stuff.
Is there some go-tos you go in that? Is there some go-to like breweries or spots, hot spots?
TF, obviously. Yeah. It's, you know, right down the road, and it's phenomenal. Definitely, definitely like one of my favorite Utah breweries, for sure. I also love going to the Beehive Distillery Bar. That is such, I love good cocktail bars. Such a good cocktail bar.
Good, that's good to know. And the gin?
So good. Their gin is pretty, honestly, no hate. Their gin is not my favorite gin. It's a little too intense for me personally for what I like. But I do like some of their other. I don't hate it. I do like it.
Right.
It's not necessarily my go-to for gin.
Okay, that's fine.
What I do like is one of their, like, you know, on the board cocktails is they do an old fashioned, but they do it with their barrel aged gin instead of a whiskey. And that's actually really good. I love that a lot. Because you still get a lot of those, obviously you still get a lot of those barrel notes that you expect from a whiskey. So it's like halfway there, but it's just
Try Hammer Springs really cool barrel aged gin.
Did I try that? No, I didn't try that. But we did use that one year we aged our revenge in that one year.
Ooh.
With the what did we call that? I don't remember.
I mean, you guys have a lot of beers. Yeah. So anyway, sorry to distract you from that question.
No, you're good.
So how do you separate work life and...
Self-care, yeah, separating work life. It's important, I think, to have hobbies outside of the industry. You know, like the sword stuff. I do Dungeons and Dragons. I'm a dungeon master.
Satan's game,
absolutely. Really talk about Satan. No, I don't. My world that I've created is called Taco World. It's a world shaped like a taco. It's real silly. The whole premise for the campaign started with the idea of a pun about traveling to the Edgelands where there is an Edge Lord. So
okay,
that's where so it's a very fun, silly campaign. Sometimes it gets serious. I like to play with my players' emotions a little bit, get them attached to.
Are you what they call a dungeon master?
I am a dungeon master.
How does one become a dungeon master?
You just start doing it. Generally, it's that you want to play Dungeons and Dragons and nobody else wants to be the DM, and so you just like, fine, I'll do it, and then you get stuck with it.
And then you are the...
I'm the... It's called being a forever DM. Which is
being
where
a forever DM.
That's what it's called. It's, you know, and I do enjoy... DMing, certainly. But it's one of those things where you're also, like, I'm also going and I'm just, you know, creating characters all the time that I'll never get to actually play, which is kind of a bummer. I just think about them a lot.
Is that where you go get lost and have the therapeutic kind of creativity?
Not necessarily just in the creating the characters, but I'd say the whole, you know, DMing, at least what I like to do, I'm using the Dungeons and Dragons, you know, source material to create my own world, to create my own campaigns, to create my own story. And that's a really nice, you know, brewing is a good creative outlet, but this is definitely a different type of creativity.
Yes.
And this is just, it's a really nice creative outlet where I can, you know, create, like, you write what you know, and... At least what I kind of know is history. I'm very much an very, very amateur armchair historian.
Armchair historian.
Yeah.
Ooh.
You're not actually a, you know, by education a historian, but you love reading history shit.
Yeah.
And I love that. And so
I love that term.
Yeah, it's a good term.
Yeah.
But I love basically creating my own histories for this world. It's really fun.
Is that because you have that sense of control in a way, or a sense of freedom?
I'd say it's a sense of freedom. And also part, like, another important part to creating your own histories is that you're also doing that with your players as you do this, you know, this story. It's collaborative storytelling. And so the world changes because of their actions and how I, as the DM, think the world would respond to that, right? And so that can completely change the course of what I hadn't planned for my campaign. And that can sometimes be frustrating if you've planned hours that week for something, but it's also really invigorating and exciting because it keeps you on your toes and you're like, okay, let's throw all that shit out the window and let's go down whatever this weird thing you guys want to actually do today. And that can be fun. And it's ultimately a lot of the times it can end up being a better story that way because it's something you would have never thought about.
Right. So you obviously passionate about it and you get lost in it.
Yeah.
Do you ever have imposter syndrome within that kind of world?
Definitely. So, I certainly have a player that I know who's a lot more experienced with Dungeons and Dragons than I am. He probably plays in Satan's Game. Yeah, that's what we're just going to call it for this. He plays Satan's Game a lot more than I do. He plays probably I know he plays at least 3 times a week, probably more than that. I know he does some online stuff. He plays with his roommates. I think he runs a campaign. So he knows a lot of the Dungeons & Dragons has tons and tons and tons of rules. And a lot of the trick with that is interpreting the way they use the language in those rules.
Okay.
So there are certain phrases that they use that mean a certain thing, and you would really only know the specifics of the way they use those phrases by like reading that phrase over and over and over again and how they apply it. I feel like he knows all the rules like front to back. And I'm just like, sometimes he'll say something like, yeah, sure. I mean, that sounds good. And sometimes he'll just have to be like, I feel like in this situation, while I appreciate what you're saying, that's not what we're going to go for. I don't feel like that really makes sense in this, you know, with what we're doing.
Right.
But I definitely feel like I have it sometimes. I think less so than in brewing, because obviously brewing has a lot of science behind it. Dungeons and Dragons and, you know, these role-playing games it's storytelling. You're making up the stuff, and you get to make up what's real and what's not in this world. That's obviously not how brewing works.
Because in your world, you can take away and add to it.
Sure.
But in a beer making, you can't really take away and add a final product. You know what I'm saying?
I don't get to change the science of beer.
Yes, exactly. You
know? But with Dungeons and Dragons, I'm in a fantasy world. I can decide what the science is in that world.
Yeah, you could change it.
Yeah.
You're God in a way, right?
Yeah.
So how can you liken that to taking it back into beer making? Because that one individual can look at the rules or the word playing out, you know, frontwards or backwards.
Mm-hmm.
So how can we do that in beer making where you can look at that frontwards or backwards? Because I see some people, and to me, it's a skill to watch someone make a beer, and I feel like they can make it backwards.
Sure.
I can't. I couldn't do that.
Sure.
Because of science, right?
Yeah.
So how can you liken that into the beer world?
It's a good question.
Yeah.
So
I'm trying to think about it, too, while you're trying to answer. How do I answer?
How do you...
To finding that detail, specific in detail, going back to that. He knows the rules inside and out.
I would say with, obviously with making beer... The least important aspect is the recipe development. It's still very important, but there are so many other important things for that. You can have a really good recipe, and if everything else is done poorly, it's still going to be a really bad beer, right? And you can have an okay recipe, and everything goes perfectly right, and you can still have a pretty good beer.
Yeah.
Right? But so the most important part is certainly not the recipe development, but obviously... The recipe development is like really, really good recipe development along with everything else is what's going to separate a good beer from a really good beer is fine tuning, certainly in every aspect, but design that beer is the first part of that. And I would say that when you're creating a beer, it's important to know what things are going to taste like. You have to, I guess you could look at that as kind of like the rules and like putting all these, you know, it's cooking, right?
Yeah.
Making beer, or at least
I feel like a chef.
Hot side is certainly cooking.
I've wanted to wear aprons at work, but I've been told no.
You should wear that. You should wear that apron.
You should.
Taken into HR real quick. But, you know, looking at your ingredients and thinking about the flavors you want, especially when you're brewing, when you're taking something traditional and you're maybe changing around to be a little bit less traditional in terms of beer style, right? It's important to know what flavors you want to get out of that. A lot of times I think about the link between flavors and, because what we taste, right, has a lot to do with memory.
Okay.
Right? Like, you link a certain flavor with maybe the first time you taste that, or just an important memory that's linked with that flavor. And so, like, a lot of people, like, the smell of, like, baking bread or, like, cookies in the oven or something is a really nice smell for people, obviously, because that's, it's, well, it smells good. But I think it smells good because we know it's something really nice is we're gonna have a treat when that's right. done. Or maybe you have like a memory good, yeah. from like your grandma making those or your mom or you know something like that. But I think a lot of the aromas and the flavors that we really really like and we get attached to come from important memories. And so when you're creating a beer, I like to think about really specifically what real specific flavors I'm trying to get. Mm-hmm. And why I'm trying to get them, and how you're going to mix those together to get other flavors. And so knowing your ingredients is a really important part of that.
Absolutely.
And I don't know, I guess that's kind of like trying to learn all the rules and trying to put it together to create something.
But you think about it, I'm seeing the
correlation world
between that, because you need to know what flavors in your world or what memories, you know, and you know yeah. how to build. Because I literally see how you can play D&D,
Satan's game,
and you're brewing beer because you understand those details and what it takes to make that final. Because you need, it's called a quest, right? You need that quest enjoyable.
Yes,
you need that beer final product to be enjoyable.
Yeah,
but how do we build that and make that become the quest it is? How do we make that beer become the beer it is?
Yeah,
right. You could sit here and have this awesome story you're gonna play in your in your roles, but like, unless everyone's in. And you have all the pieces, you have all the flavors, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
So I see what you're doing, and you like that creating, but then seeing it come to fruition.
Absolutely.
And fine-tuning that fruition, making it as best as possible. That's why I think you're a good brewer, Jake.
Your answer is so much better than mine. Damn, that was such a good answer.
But that's why I think you're a good brewer. That's why I'm very enticed to you, and that's why I think it's like, okay, this guy's mind is really cool. I want to get into it, and we've gotten into it. This is why I brought you today. Like, I want to hear what makes you tick? What makes you think? And this is, for me, I'm looking, I get to see you. Because every time I see you, because my wife asked me, who are you interviewing again? I'm like, oh, remember Jacob? What's Jacob? Because she knows, I introduced her to, you know.
Sure.
She goes,
There's also a lot of average height, white, bearded Jacobs. Men named Jacob in the brewing industry.
But it's like the one we always get a selfie with when we're like TF or, and all I said was, his fiance has better hair than me. Oh, that Jacob. Thanks, babe.
Yep. That's great.
But like, you know, you are always smiling. You're always kind to us. Like you're just a beam of light, right? And so what makes you tick, it's fascinating to see how you're going about growing up, seeing your past, and then fine-tuning the very end. Because, you know, your upbringing was, let's figure this out. But then now you're like, okay, now I can fine-tune what I'm doing and honing my craft.
Yeah.
And in all these aspects, and you're still learning. You're still learning as a brewer, and you're still learning as within Satan's game. And your HEMA.
As a devotee of our Lord Lucifer.
Oh, shout out Big L. So when it comes to beer making, what's the most accomplished you've ever felt when you've released or made a beer, or not even making a beer? What's the most accomplished you felt as a brewer?
Honestly, this is a funny story as well, but it did make me feel like I finally made it. So there was the Gungan Sith Lord, my dark Czech lager.
Oh, which again, I keep talking to you about this. It's fucking great.
Thank you. I appreciate that. One of those beers that I'm never 100% happy with. There's always something I want to change just a little bit.
And you
bit
sent
about
that
it.
To GABF, did you not?
We did. Yeah. Good. I'm excited to get the notes back. We didn't win any medals, but you know, there's so many good breweries.
And there's
right?
a lot of entries this year too.
There's always so many entries. Like when you win a medal, it's so exciting because it's such a hard thing to do. If you don't win a medal, it's not really losing. It's just that you didn't win.
So us at Strap Tank, we were all watching it live.
Yeah.
And the last one that we had a category was the wet hop beer.
Nice.
And we, you know, didn't win. So we struck out, right?
Yep. Yeah.
And all three of us like responded within seconds of each other. All right, let's go. I'm excited. Let's get the notes back. Let's go. We have work to do.
Absolutely.
Like, none of us are like, fuck this shit. Yeah. Fucking no. Like, every single one of us, we all text each other. I'm like, let's go. I'm so excited. We're going to meet, have a meeting next week. We're going to talk about it. Yeah. Like, we're all excited again. Like, it got us, like, not invigorated. I guess been invigorated. Like, light that fire under our ass. Let's go. And the passion's still there, man.
GABF is great. GABF and World Beer Cup are really good because you do get good notes back.
If I great palates.
On the beers. Yeah. Right. And it's one of those. And, you know, sometimes you get good notes back from some of the other competitions.
Sure.
But those ones, you definitely know you're going to get really good notes
back.
Because
you've got ranked judges.
Yeah. Though. And you're going to get stuff that's, you know, that's certainly actionable. Hmm. And that's always great to get those, to get that back and be like, oh, yeah. Like, that's, you know, if you're trying to make a beer, that's certainly to style. If you're not caring about making beer to style, then these competitions won't help you. Obviously, in terms of getting the notes back, I don't think. Because they're not about
beers.
I've never
thought of it that way.
They're not about beers that, obviously, to judge it, you have to have some sort of guidelines.
Right, and it has to fit those guidelines. Yeah.
So it's not, if you're not making a beer that is strictly to style, or that's not your intent, I'm not saying don't submit the beer. I'm just saying you not winning anything isn't a sign that your beer is bad. Like, even if you are trying to make it to style, that's not a sign that your beer is bad. Your beer might still be bad, but that doesn't mean that's not necessarily a sign that it's bad. But those, if you're trying to make a beer that's to style, those notes are so valuable. And if they're not, a lot of times the notes are just funny because you're like, what in the hell are they talking about? One time we got notes back for our Goza, for our Lake Effect, and they said it tasted like peanut butter and chocolate. And we're like, dude, you got the wrong beer. I don't know how to tell you this. How? Or you had like palate fatigue or something. Like, it's just wild to me.
Because that's the most opposite flavors in that beer.
Yeah, wild. And like, it's one of those things that's like, and I'm going, of course, I'm like, I'm going to taste this because, you know, maybe it's like I can figure out a way that they maybe thought that. Because tasting's weird. Tasting is hard. It's hard to put words to flavors, right?
In essence, yeah.
It's not how our brains are really wired. It's about, like I said, it's about
memories.
It's about memories.
It tastes
about
like
emotions.
A field.
It's about,
of
danger. Don't eat that.
Yeah.
Or, yum, this is so good. It has the sugar.
It reminds me of my grandma's bakery.
Right.
Yeah.
But I don't know how they got that. It's so weird. And like, we looked in the other judging notes, you know, it had like the same number for the beer entry and everything. All the other judging notes were normal, I bet. And this one person is just fucking wild. Anyways, nice. Got a fly in there. Yum. It's bound to happen. What were we talking about? We were talking about Gungan Sith Lord. Oh yeah. How I feel like I made it.
Most accomplished beer you've ever made.
Okay. Yeah. So,
I got you.
I got, Becca sent me a screenshot of Untappd. Someone had rated our Gungan Sith Lord on Untappd. They gave it, I think they gave it like 2.75. They gave it like, you know, halfway or whatever.
Right.
So, Gungan Sith Lord, just to reiterate, a dark Czech lager. This person
that tastes
said,
like peanut butter and
good beer, tasted dark, but a little too lagery. What do you want? What do you want from me? That's the point, dude.
It's like
it was so wild. But seeing that scene, like, oh my God, because I've read those, like, you know, the WTF Untappd
right.
on Instagram and all those, and they're so hilarious. I love them.
They can be.
And I saw that. I saw that my beer made that, and I was like, oh my God, I've made it. I've made it as a brewer. This is the moment. I had that wild, wild Untappd review on one of
that.
My beers. I did it, and I was just so much more excited than I was upset. Because, like, how do you be upset about something that stupid? It's just so dumb.
Right.
That's so hard to be legitimately mad about that.
That's funny. I've never looked at Untappd with our beers. I've never looked at.
I wouldn't. I never have either. The only reason I saw it was because Becca sent it to me.
Because Becca sent it to you.
She has to deal with that stuff. That's
right,
part
right.
of her job, I think. I would assume she does it.
But I mean,
so
Becca is
part of her
and
job.
And also,
now,
I think Becca is one of the biggest supporters, and she's got one of the most insanely good palates in the state.
She's so good.
Like, she's ridiculous.
I think sometimes I feel like, you know, with imposter syndrome, sometimes I feel like my palate is such shit.
Yeah.
Like, there will be days I'll come in, and, you know, talking about, like, a beer that I obviously, I taste at least, like, once a week, right? And I know how it's supposed to taste. And I'll go in and I'll taste it, and, like, just some mornings, it'll be like, this tastes completely different to me. Like, some mornings, my palate will be completely off.
That's right. It's fair.
And at least I've learned at this point that that's a day that, like, I shouldn't be judging. I shouldn't be, like, making critical decisions about beers on that day.
Yeah.
Because my palate's obviously, for whatever reason, my palate's just off today.
You know, and age plays a factor, not of the product of the beer.
Okay.
And what you've had that day and then your
for
mood.
Sure.
I really do feel moods change how you taste beer.
Yeah.
Now, if you gave me a beer and say, hey, David, give me your best impression or your best judging notes on this beer.
Sure.
I would do the best I could.
Yeah.
If you gave me one of my beers, I'd be like, I'd get so lost and critical inside of that. I'm like.
So the trick is to not tell you it's one of your beers.
Yes, I think so. Because if I knew at all, but if I was good enough and I realized it's my beer.
Yeah.
Then I would totally still judge and critique the fuck out of it.
Yeah.
Like, I would try to find what's wrong with it.
Absolutely.
Which can be a great thing, but can be a very terrible thing.
Sure.
And so I get that.
Yeah.
I've tasted, you know, you got to taste your beers while they're working. And some days I'm like, fuck this beer.
Yep.
Whatever. Fuck this beer.
Absolutely.
Fuck this beer. Now, what do I do? Fuck this beer. I'm going to dump all, like, you know, 500 gallons on the drain. Fuck. You know, it's bah. And then you get someone else like, what the fuck? You're fine.
Yeah.
You're totally fine. But we are our most critical judges in life and beer making and everything.
I think if you're not the most, if you're not the most critical person of your own beers and the beers you're developing, the beers you're making as a team, whatever, if you find it at least hard to be like the most critical person of that, then you're gonna let stuff slip through your fingers that you shouldn't.
And that's why even on the bad days, I have like bad tasting days, I will write down in my little private notebook, like, this is what this tasted like today.
Sure.
So, and then I can go back and be like, okay, well, 6 out of the 7 days, it tasted the same. And that one day it tasted this way. So maybe it's me. And that's totally fine. It can be me. And that's why we got to keep on tap, like on top of our beers and top of our palates and always surrender to the fact that we know nothing.
Absolutely.
So you had the dark Czech lager. You've made a great rice lager, which I was very impressed with. Congrats on that.
Thank you.
What's a favorite style of beer? Loaded question. Favorite style of beer to drink.
Okay.
And favorite style of beer to make. And a style that you haven't made here at Proper that you are just hell-bent to make.
Ooh, okay. So, favorite style of beer to drink is still most of the time is still going to be, well, I guess it's going to, I'm going to split it between two beers. It's either going to be a minority of the time is going to be something like a barley wine. I love barley wines, but obviously I don't want to drink that all the time. But when I want a barley wine, it's a good barley wine is the most delicious thing. Like, I mean, that's the majority of my personal beer cellar is barley wines, which is a problem because obviously I don't want to drink it every day.
It's hard.
So I have to go through and I have to pick out this one's going to get too old. Like, I'm not one of those people that likes to sit on, like, you know, barley wines can age for 10 years. Yeah, it can. That doesn't mean you should.
Right.
There are probably people that disagree with me. But I think for most beers that you're cellaring, the sweet spot is generally younger than you think. For beers, don't take that out of context. The majority of the time though, what I want to drink is, a really well-made, not necessarily a light lager, but just a really well-made, a crispy boy of some sort. So like we talk about how, like one of my favorite spots to go to, you know, just after work or something, is TF.
Who just won silver for the killer beer at JBF. So congrats, TF.
Yeah,
all the family over there.
Well-deserved. Yeah. They're Helles, which I think they almost always have on. It's so good.
Did you have the Helles Bock at Oktoberfest?
The Heller Bock? Was it the Heller
Bock? Heller Bock, yeah. The 7%? smoked my ass that day.
Yeah.
Didn't know I was going to sneak up on me like that.
That was my last beer, though.
Me too. So I had to leave after that. I looked at the wife. I'm like, I'm out of here. I'm going to be embarrassing. Yep. We got to go. So we literally left.
I cannot give reliable notes about that beer.
Yeah. Mm-mm, same.
But they're just their Helles lager. You know, their Munich Helles. It's so good. They're Edel pils. They're like German style pils.
Oh, I love that one.
It's so good. I love that. So like that realm of beer. Like, and it doesn't necessarily have to be like a traditional German whatever.
But a crispy, crushable.
A crispy boy. A crispy boy or girl, if you will.
Yeah.
A crispy beer. There you go. It's the majority of the time that's what I want. For stuff to make, I think it's still got to be a lager because I love seeing that color come through the sight glass. I love seeing the clarity, and generally I'm not doing, at least hop wise, I'm not doing something super complicated. Obviously the hops are still really important.
Yeah. Balancing factor. Yeah.
But you're not throwing in like shit tons of citra normally. And, you're using nice, more subtle notes. I don't know. I think it's part of that aspect of what we were talking about with, I like the whole scene. I enjoy the process of like beginning to end,
right,
seeing this beer. And so knowing that it's going to be a lager that I'm going to love to drink at the end of it makes the hot side of it, the brewing of it, so much more.
To put it in perspective.
So much more pleasurable.
Yeah, absolutely. It's for those who don't make beer, the way I can put that analogy together is it's like on a hot summer day, mowing the lawn, and at the very end of the lawn mowing, you're sweating, you're gross, you're covered in grass, you're just done. And I just want something to crush, and it will just.
How tall is your lawn?
I don't have one, and okay. you want to be able to just sit back and, you know, be able to enjoy that, right?
Yeah.
So I have an HOA, so I don't give a fuck about my lawn.
There you go. All right. I say, if you're covered in grass, like head to toe.
Hey, back in the day, though, I would love to have one when I was, in college, mowing grandma and grandpa's lawn.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
But the only thing I can go for is like a Pacifico, which to me is like, I think that's why my Pacifico is one of my favorite beers, because it was that one where it's a hot summer day and my thirst needs to be quenched.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And by God, give me that Pacifico.
You get that the long neck Pacifico. 100%. You put a lime wedge in there. Every swig you take, it passes through that lime wedge.
I squeeze a little bit and then I shove it right there and it stays in the neck. Oh yeah.
I love that. That is the best way to drink Pacifico.
Amen.
It's so
That's
delicious.
That's why when I get that question, everyone's like, what's your favorite? I'm like, Pacifico.
Pacifico, absolutely.
It is.
Pacifico.
So then favorite beer to make, okay? So a style of beer you haven't made at proper that you want, you're just hell-bent to make. Steve, are you listening?
Let's see.
You say pastry stout, we're going. I'm turning it off right now.
Don't worry. That's not even in my mind.
A lactose Belgian seltzer.
Nope.
Triple hopped.
Nope. Okay. Absolutely not. Because I feel like a lot of the stuff that I've wanted to do, I have done. I've been given, for the most part, Jeff, our brewery manager, has been. He's very much let me chase after the things I've wanted to make.
Do you go through the BJCP guidelines?
Am I what?
We have to go through the BJCP guidelines to see what beer style you haven't made yet?
Oh, gosh, maybe.
All right, let's pull it up.
That I would want to do.
While I'm pulling this up, have you become a beer judge yet?
BJCP? No, I am. I have talked about doing Idaho next year.
Do it. I mean, the only way you're going to become a better brewer is if you're understanding styles and you're fine-tuning it, and then understanding. Yeah. You're talking about those flavors you're trying to enhance or trying to pick out. Hey, this flavor needs to be here, here, here. We talked about that process.
Yeah.
The better way to train that palate, like you would into HEMA, when you have to train the history, but also understand the sword and whatever, you need to understand why this style needs to be this style.
Yeah.
And it'll help you become. It'll help you hone in your brewing career, just like it would. Actually doing the sword fighting.
Yeah. Okay. You know what it is? There's a couple I've seen on here. But the one that I realized we really haven't done any of here, here at proper, we haven't really done any Scottish styles at all. And like, I love a good wee heavy.
Ooh,
like, I would love to do a wee heavy. That would be nice. Also, they've added a lot of stuff since the last time I've
really
looked through. Because obviously, I use this for like when I'm starting with a beer, I'll start with looking at BJCP and looking at like, because they give really good, like, here's the, you know, like the history of it and like the tasty notes and aroma.
What ingredients you that should have.
Me, yeah, but that gives me a good point for, okay, what am I, like when I talk about like the ingredients and the flavors I want to create, tells me the flavors that you want to get out of it. So that's
that
really
style
good.
We talked about, to style.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Be
a judge, dude. I'm telling you. It's easy. When it happens at Be Wolder, the class exam.
Grodziski. I like that Polish, like, smoked, is it a lager? Is it a smoked lager?
I think it's a smoked lager.
I guess I could just click on it and find out, huh?
Gives you the color, aroma, flavor, all that. Yeah.
Smoke flavor.
But the lager, right?
That's aroma.
Go to overall impression or history. I'm curious now. Now you got
flavor, appearance, overall impression. Yeah. It's an ale.
Okay, read the overall impression.
Impression. A low gravity, highly carbonated. I love it already. Light bodied ale combining an oak smoked flavor with a clean hop bitterness. Highly sessionable. I love a good highly sessionable
oak
beer.
Oak smoked.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'd probably use for smoked malt. What we use is solstice malt generally.
Ah.
That's what we use in our Whispers of the Primordial Sea.
Don't tell me that. No, it's my favorite beer ever. That was the beer of the year last year. It really was.
It's such
Fuck
a good beer.
Jeff for making that beer.
I love going back to that beer. It's great. Beer. But
it's a great summertime beer.
Yeah, that I think still like a Scottish beer.
I think the wee heavy was a good
some sort because I do love those you know, nice heavy, you know, dark beers that can, especially, you know, because our
deep malt flavor.
Oh yeah, ooh yeah. I feel like I love the extremes of the beer spectrum. You know, in terms of I want something either really light, or I'm going to want something real heavy, like a barley wine or, you know, an old ale or something.
But a barley wine to me is more of that kind of like pinkies up. It's more finer done in a way.
Okay.
When you look at like a wee heavy or a Scottish, like it's got that heavier malt bill.
Sure.
I'm a sucker. Like, we go back to the Guinness. I love that like malt, like that sexy malt touch.
Yeah.
And I think I'm more of a malt head. I mean, lagers are the jam.
Yeah.
But if somehow I can just heavy on the malt, like over the top malt, that's my jam. I love that. Because I think the first beer I ever made was a Scottish ale.
Oh yeah?
Yeah.
Which what kind of?
Just a sessionable Scottish, no peat.
Okay.
So I took out the peat. I don't like peat at all.
Okay.
So I took it out. I made a...
like one of the like low gravity, like 3-4%.
So it's supposed to be like a 3-2.
Okay.
Came out like 3-4. That's just like easy table
still
beer.
Still pretty close.
Yeah. So yeah. It's fine. Whatever.
I love that.
And it was my first temp. I'm like, it's very melanoidiny, but it was great. Yeah. And that's something I would drink. If I made that, I'm like, it's on my keg. Aerator.
Yep.
Right? What's something at proper that you haven't accomplished yet that you're wanting to accomplish before your time's up at proper, whenever that, heaven forbid or Satan forbid, will be?
This is certainly very vain, but I would love to win a GABF medal. Or, you know, one of my, obviously we work as a team. It's still everybody's beer. But like one of the beers that I developed.
Had a heavy hand in?
Yeah, had a heavier hand in, certainly.
Yeah.
That would be a really good feeling. I feel like that would be just the cherry on top. And I can be like, okay, I'm going to go do whatever else I want to do now.
Well, speaking of which, what is some goals you have in life? What's something you wanted to accomplish that you haven't been able to, you know, what do you want to do? Jacob, when you grow up, like, what's going on?
When
there?
I grow up, I think for me, it's kind of, I'm open to a lot of things. I would love to, if the opportunity presented itself, if a really good opportunity presented itself to move into the wine world or, you know, or distilling or ciders, you know, something, you know, that's certainly very, that's, where my skills are transmissible, transferable, I guess is a better word for that. I would love to take that opportunity. That's not something that I'm necessarily, at least right now, going to like chase after, but it's something that if the opportunity arose, I would definitely jump at that to learn, to expand my knowledge of fermentation
more. I love that, man.
That would be great. I also hear, what I've heard is that the wine world, wine making is a lot slower in terms of it's a lot more mellow.
Gotta be more patient.
Yeah, and that sounds great. Because
really,
the beer industry is fast and it's tough, and that's why we talk about things like self care and like burnout is really bad in the beer industry. And there's been the New Brewer just had a good article about dealing with burnout that I read.
Oh, really?
Week. And
I'll look into that one.
I feel like there's been a lot of push to fight burnout, which is good. I love the beer world. But if I certainly had a really good opportunity that I could jump at to move into something that's, you know, that's a little bit more moderately paced and where I also have the opportunity to learn, where there's just a whole new world to learn.
Yeah.
I would definitely take that opportunity.
That'd I love be cool. these vast challenges you give yourself to create and become an immersed in a world where you just want to get lost and know it all and figure it out.
Absolutely.
You got a beautiful mind, dude.
And that's what being a nerd is all about, is you, when you get into something, you want to know everything about it. That's what makes a nerd a nerd. It's not about being into a specific thing. It's like being a beer nerd is you don't accept just liking beer. You want to know everything about the beer since you like it.
I love how you use the word nerd. I'm like, the word I would use for me is passion.
It's the same thing.
Yeah, it is.
It's the same thing.
So, but people label it as nerd, and you think like, you know,
yeah,
Satan's game.
But I think, yeah, or you know, or like, because I mean, you think like, wow, these people go out and they dress up as Star Trek characters. Yeah, because they know everything about Star Trek. They don't just like Star Trek. They're passionate about it, right?
Yeah.
They're a nerd because you see them, they love this thing more than you could ever, someone from the outside could ever imagine.
So much to them.
Right? Because they know, they like it, and like, I have to know everything. That's absolutely what being a nerd is.
Yeah.
You can take that into anything.
Yeah.
It's just about being passionate about. And the trick is you got to narrow it down. If you pick too many things, it's really hard.
And overwhelming.
Yeah.
And you're going to spread yourself so thin that you can't even focus on the one thing you really care about. No, you're right. So Jacob, before we end this, is there any questions you have for me that you want to ask or anything that you need? How can I help you become a better brewer? HEMA, Satan's Game Dungeon Master. What can I do to help you out, brother?
You should come over sometime and I can practice throwing you down onto the ground.
No, I won't.
No? No, well, barring that then, I don't know. Just,
I totally come to that though.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really would.
It's fun. It's fun stuff. I just keep doing what you're doing. You're connecting. I mean, the beer world is already super connected, but you're connecting it even more. Like you, when I see you at an event, everybody knows you, and because you've talked to everybody. That's your whole thing. Is you go in and you talk to everybody.
I don't know why, but you talk to everyone.
You love people, and people love you. It's so just keep doing what you're doing. And
well, the same one you want to meet or talk to or like that connection, like I can make that happen. That's kind of a question.
We should definitely do.
New world?
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. We should absolutely do that. Because that's definitely one of those things where...
I wrote it down.
I love, obviously, like, I love spirits, but it's one of those things that I know I don't know anything about. And I really, really, truly do not know anything about it.
Fascinating.
But I would love to know
Let's go, let's go. Come co-host with me when we do the new world.
Absolutely.
We might have to make a drive, but we got to do it before it gets cold.
Okay.
I'm down, man. I'm sorry. I'll make a lunch trip out of it.
Yeah.
I'll make it happen. But Jacob, for reals, I think, again, you're awesome, dude. You're badass. Thank you for being so kind to me and the wife every time we see you guys.
Yeah.
And it's nothing but smiles. And I love how we can both nerd out on beer and talk about it. And man, I just don't give up your passion. Don't give up who you are. And you won't. Keep telling me all the things, man. Keep telling me all the things. And let me know when the big day is, because I'll be there.
Absolutely.
Come celebrate.
Absolutely.
But Jake, on that note, until the next beverage, my friends. Cheers.
Cheers.
This has been another episode of The Tastemasters. You can find us on Instagram at @the_Tastemasters, on Twitter at The Tastemasters, and on Facebook as The Tastemasters. Like, share, subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends, and thanks for listening.
Produced and recorded at Fuse Audio. Give them a follow at Fuse_Audio.